Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solar-topia.
Started to burn too many things we found. We started to burn too many things we found. That's the Gloria Starr Williams singing with Pete Seeger, David Burns, the Solartopia song, the Grammy-winning Solartopia song on the Tomorrow's Children album. And we got, we're going to talk again today about election theft, the upcoming contest in Alabama. But I got to say that we are in a time of mourning, folks. I mean, this is utter catastrophe going on in the Congress. I don't know if they voted yet, but it appears quite certain that the Republicans are going to pass this catastrophic, apocalyptic budget bill that actually rolls back the clock in America 70 years. I mean, essentially, they're going to go after, they're going to use this as a tool to go after Social Security. Medicare, of course, dates from 1933, 34 and 35. Medicare, which dates from the 1960s. They're opening the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge to drilling. They're destroying Obamacare. They're handing over $1.5 trillion to rich people in this country while gutting working people, the working middle class. This is apocalyptic. And I looked at the front page of the New York Times today, which has been reasonable covering this. And it's all filled with Garrison Keillor and checks allegations and, you know, which have their place. Although I do happen to believe in due process. I must be in the minority in this country. The Fourth Amendment says that you have the right to confront your accusers. And we can do that on another show. But the magnitude of this assault on the American public. I believe, frankly, that this budget bill, this tax cut, which is far more than a tax cut, is the single most significant piece of legislation passed in this country in the last 80 years. And I know, you know, as a historian, I need to be avoid hyperbole, and not go too far over the deep end. But the fact of the matter is that the range of destruction that's involved in this bill is almost incomprehensible. I mean, from the environment to Social Security, Medicare, every form of American life is under assault in this bill. I mean, let's talk about abortion. I think they tried to get an abortion rider in there. It's a brilliant strategy. Just, you know, create a huge tax cut for the super rich and then stick on all this other stuff use the power of the presidency and every trick in the book, distract the public with these crazy sex allegations, just go, you know, all over the place with that. And certainly there's a place for it, but still in awe. I mean, there should be a permanent hearing council of some kind on these kinds of allegations. I mean, to see Garrison Keillor go down based on allegedly putting his hand on somebody's back, I mean, maybe more will come out, but still, he has a right to a hearing. Mark Ash at the Reader Supported News has a good piece on this. But we'll deal with that another show. The bottom line, people, is this alleged tax legislation, which is so much more than tax legislation, is a monumental tomb. It's a tombstone for the American economy. And, you know, the point is, people are saying, oh, and this is the point of today's show, oh, the American public, which is going to have to be immediately impacted. I personally am going to be immediately impacted because I'm on Medicare. And they're just going to slash Medicare. You know, I'm 71. People from 65 up are just going to be decimated by this. Obamacare is out the window. And, you know, they pulled this off without, you know, under the shade of so much else going on. I mean, it's a beyond a catastrophe. And the point is that there's no recourse. We're going to be talking today with two deep into it election experts and a member of the Democratic National Committee. So who we got here? Steve Rosenfeld, are you with us?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. John, yes, very well. Thank you. You're in San Francisco. John Brakey?
Certainly am. And hi, Steve.
Hey.
John, you're in Phoenix?
Tucson.
Okay.
Tucson, Arizona.
Susie Shannon, are you with us? Nope. We're missing Susie Shannon so far. So hopefully she'll call in. I'll send her an email. Mimi Kennedy, did you jump in by chance? Okay, Mimi, I think, is shooting today. So, all right, we got you two guys. And you are two of the leading election theft experts in the country. And the idea that we're going to have any recourse on this catastrophic assault on the core of American life here has to do with whether or not we're going to have elections that in which the votes are actually going to be counted and in which American citizens are actually going to be able to allowed to vote. What a concept. So, Steve, let's start with you. You have written a couple of excellent pieces lately on Alternet about this general topic. And what is the status of our electoral system? Do you think that in the coming 2018 midterms, we're going to get a fair vote count and that we'll get a fair ability of American citizens to come out and vote?
Well, hey, thanks, Harvey, for having me on here. I think the short answer is we have to stop thinking that we're going to get a fair vote count, that all the votes are going to be counted, that there's not going to be barriers that are put in place or those barriers are going to be removed. And we really need to look at the size of the wave, you know, literally the size of the margin of victory that's going to unseat the people who created these barriers. And it's not small. And if you want to take a look at what we need, take a look at what just happened in Virginia. We're literally, now we can go into all the reasons without, you know, naming them here, how there were structural biases built into the system from the way districts are drawn by segregating voters to obstacles at the polling places that basically prevent, you know, peel off of more voters. You know, you have a structural 10% head start for the Republicans. And in Virginia, the Democrats came within one or two seats, it's still not quite resolved, of taking back the legislature. They got the governor. That's the size of a wave we need if we're going to get this class of Republicans out of power. And I should say, you know, there's something very similar in the tax bill in terms of the Republican approach to what we see with their whole anti-voter strategy. You know, Paul Krugman wrote earlier this week that no one provision in the tax bill seems to be offensive enough in terms of, like, harming people in a way that jumps out. But collectively, they all add up to this giant transfer of wealth, you know, where hundreds of millions of people in the middle class are going to start paying more and more taxes over the next decade at the same time that, as you said, government services are going to be shrunk or feel the pressure to be shrunk because the tax-based revenues are going to be shrinking. And it's also a transfer of money from blue states to red states. So what you've got in elections is the same kind of thing. You've got this targeting of the process. And the Republicans are really smart. And they just push this stuff through. They don't care about representative government in the slightest. And, you know, they care about pleasing, a certain donor class. And that's the nature of our system. So when you say, like, our election's going to be fair, you know, is every ballot going to be counted? Is everybody going to get to vote? The answer is no, no, no. And then what can we do about it? And that's what's most critical. You know, we should stop expecting things are going to be just fair, and this is a democracy. You know, look what the other side is doing.
Look, really?
They're back. And we, you know, we have to know what it takes to take back power and not just feel like we're fighting the good fight and we tried.
Steve Rosenfeld, what is the name of the article, your most recent one? That give us the title.
Gosh, I got to find it here.
Okay.
Because
that's all right.
Because I just
okay,
wrote,
so I want people to be able
I'm
to find it.
I'm going
to
just wrote another one, on this tax thing. No, it's called How the GOP has Already Hijacked the Alabama Election. And the reason
right.
I wrote this was Alabama is not a state that's on the national, radar for election integrity activists and voting rights activists. It is for some people who pay attention and really fight the fight at the state level. But in general, it's not a frontline state like Ohio and Florida and Virginia or North Carolina. But what you have in Alabama is this incredible history of voter suppression, that partisan voter suppression that is so layered. And my point was, I was reading on these different election blogs how people were saying, oh my gosh, they're going to steal it electronically, what can we do? And when people write those kinds of stories or begin to tell them, it drives me a little crazy because so much else is structurally rigged against us and is skipped when we just rush to the end of the process. I mean, and the thing is, it was Alabama that gave us the lawsuit that gutted the Voting Rights Act. It's Alabama where they just passed a law to try to re-enfranchise felons, except if you're a white-collar criminal, you don't lose your voting rights. If you rob a grocery store, you lose your voting rights. I mean, it's just so, it's so Byzantine. And I don't think, we should, any of us should expect that Roy Moore is going to be defeated. I mean, and we should not rely on polls, because that one thing 2016 taught us is polls are off. And hey, in the 2016 primary, Hillary Clinton was, the polls were off by more than, the exit polls were off by more than 10%. So it's such a Byzantine, swamp.
Well, it's a Jim Crow swamp. Alabama,
yeah.
By the way, just for people's perspective, we have a system, a constitution that was set up in 1787 and ratified, the following year, and then the Bill of Rights was added in 1791, rather, was ratified, the most important document in our history, which is being shredded, of course. And Alabama has, it's hard to say this, Alabama has 5 million people in it. There are twice as many people in L.A. County as there are in Alabama. And yet, and there are 40 million people in California, 8 times as many people in California, where Steve and I are now, as there are in Alabama, and yet they have 2 senators, the same as California. Now, of course, we've lived this for a long time, but it's part of the problem. And so now, let me see. Let's get this going. Steve, you made an inflammatory statement. You're saying that Roy Moore is going to be elected in Alabama. And that
it looks like it.
Doug
it
Jones,
looks like it.
Well, John Brakey has been focused on that. Let's see hear John Brakey's opinion. John, what do you think? What's going to happen in Alabama?
Well, first off, I want to second a lot what Steve is saying. I'm one who recognizes that we have 3 problems in elections. One is election fraud's real. Voter suppression, done by now micro-targeting or psycho-targeting, and then, of course, gerrymandering. You know, those are the three things that I always kind of watch out for, but I specialize on the election front because that's my expertise, but I'm always looking at how they're going to ballot stuff or do other things. Now, getting back to Alabama, this is wild. I'm following things very carefully. I'm in Alabama every day through the Internet. We're talking to people on November 16th, a week after the scandal. Fox News reports that the lead of 12 points by Moore has disappeared, and he's down by 8 points, and some people have him down as low as 12. And then yesterday, I find out that it switched around because Trump endorsed, and now he's up 5 to 6 points. And I'm going, wow, what a swing. But, you know, that's not my expertise. But in order to steal, you know, you do kind of have to pass the smell test. And here I am fighting in the state. I'm dealing with the state elections director who just called me a few minutes ago, okay, because, you know, we are thinking about filing a lawsuit next week because we know as a fact that they are destroying the ballot images. 80% of that state has ballot images, and these ballot images is what these machines count. Hey, folks, they don't count the ballot. They count the copy, the picture made, and then store that. And destroying that is breaking federal law because you must preserve everything for 22 months. You know, in a conference that I was in California, you know, the Napa State Elections, the Napa Elections Administrator for Napa Valley or Napa, California, he says to him, the official ballot to him is the digital copy on his system, which is Dominion, because that's what they count. And destroying them is not an option. And the only reason I believe when they're destroyed is somebody is protecting the right to cheat now or in some future election. Hey, if I was a cop, I took a knife that you used to stab somebody, I put it in an envelope, and then we sign it, and the chain of custody is broken, it can be thrown out. It's no good. It's the same thing with these ballot images. So that's the fight I'm engaged in. And, you know, on that. So there you go.
All right. So there's two, you know, there are many ways to look at an election, but there are two basic functions in the actual physical reality of the vote. First, people got to be registered and show up. And they got to be allowed to cast an actual ballot. And then second, ballots have to be cast. They have to be counted. Now, what you're saying, John Brakey, is that the machines that are being used in Alabama will produce a ballot image.
Yeah.
But that the state of Alabama, the Secretary of State, is currently planning to destroy the ballot images. Is that correct?
Well, they have in the past, and right now they're saying, oh, we didn't know, you know, even though I knew they knew, that they're supposed to give me a decision tomorrow if they're going to send an order out to all the counties that have this equipment, which is 80% of the state, that they're going to tell them to save all images. Okay, it's an easy fix. All you do is you turn the machine on and you go and open the program up and it says save all. You save all. Right now, what they do is they're only saving in the write-ins, and then during the day, all the images are saved. They make a cast vote record. And those images are stored in temporary memory. And when you shut the machine down, it destroys it. I want you to know, in Alabama, before we started making this effort, they were telling people that they didn't turn that feature on. Okay?
Well, that's a lot of work to turn that feature on.
Yeah, it really is. What's worse of it is that it has to be on because it wouldn't work unless it's on. Do you follow me?
Yeah,
the machine
absolutely
doesn't work unless that feature is on. And then they say, why would I save these things? I have the originals. Well, let's talk about that. In Alabama, the only way you get a recount is if the results are within a half of a percent, which is not bad. But we're going to count them on the same machine, okay? And a candidate cannot say, gee, it's 0.6%. I want a challenge. No, I'm sorry. You can't. You see how the system works? Nobody has gotten a recount in that state, and the last guy who tried to get a recount wound up in prison. Don Singleman.
Don Singleman,
good man.
Yeah.
Yeah,
good man. His election was stolen. I think it was in 2002. Am I right, Steve? Yeah, was it 2002?
Yeah, before. So Harvey, what John is talking about is actually, I mean, if you step back from it, it's actually a very, very promising development. And it's something that's new, that, you know, when we first met in 2004 after, you know, the election then in Ohio, and, you know, these electronic voting machines were new, it took people like John, you know, years, literally, to figure out what was going on with all this stuff. And what's happened since then is with computers, which is computers have gotten better, and there's the capacity to store more data. What happens is a state like Alabama has all paper ballots. Now, that's a good thing, because at least if you go into court, you have a paper record you could fight over. But John is right that, you know, what happens is that people don't count by looking at ballots one by one. They look at scanners. And scanners have built-in errors. And that's just an industry standard. And by the way, that's what the Greens were fighting for in the recounts a year ago, the presidential recounts, which was to compare the hand counts to the scanned counts. And by the way, they lost in Michigan, Wisconsin, and, you know, Pennsylvania on mostly on that front. But anyway, what John is talking about is the ability to actually have verifiable recounts if it's going to be close and if a candidate can actually file, because you have to have standing to start that whole legal process. And that possibility didn't exist a couple of years ago. And what's really astounding to me in all this is I don't know why John has to fight so hard, but the fact is the reason the state election director is calling him back is because there are public records laws. You know, when I got into newspapering in the 80s, you know, I wrote the manual for the state of Vermont, the Vermont Press Association. Everybody does it every couple of years. You update it, saying, like, what's your access to public documents? I mean, this is really 101 stuff. We just live in an era where, you know, there's electronic records and paper records. The laws are probably mostly written for paper. I mean, every newspaper in America should be, like, backing up John. Because what could be more?
Well, how about the Democratic Party? Susie Shannon, have you joined us yet?
Yes, I just got on.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, so what we're talking about, this is Susie Shannon. She's a member of the Democratic National Committee, a representative, the only Bernie Sanders delegate from California that they've allowed on to the, along with Keith Ellison, to the Democratic National Committee. That's the way it goes with the Democrats. You lose an election to a low-life fascist scum who should have been beaten, you know, handily, and the people that choreographed the defeat have purged the people who could have won the election from the Democratic National Committee. And I'm still getting fundraisers from Nancy Pelosi, who should have been gone years ago, and Chuck Schumer and all these geriatric losers. And that leads me to the question. I'll go to John and then Susie to you. What has been the commitment or the involvement of the Democratic National Committee in dealing with election theft in general and specifically in Alabama?
Well, I would say this is that thanks to Susie and their other DNC members that we're working with, we're educating them, okay? Thus far, I don't think much has come out of it, but I see that because of Susie's persistence and because of a couple other people at DNC, I'm encouraged. And you know, we work with all parties to try to get them educated up on this subject because, I think there's hope there because of people like Susie. And hey, thank you, Harvey, for introducing me to this lady. In fact, I had a talk today on the strategy.
The point is we have two corporate parties in this country. One's the Democrats, founded in 1828 by Andrew Jackson. One's the Republicans, founded essentially, not entirely, by Abraham Lincoln in the 1850s and 60s. And why is it, you know, that we have to educate the Democratic Party? I'm sure the Republicans are well aware of what's going on with these machines. Why does the Democratic Party at this point in time have to be educated by a handful of freelance activists like us
into these basic situations. And Susie, as a member of the DNC, can you explain this mystery?
Well, I think that if ever there was a time to go it's now in Alabama. And I think that, you know, I'd wanted the Democratic National Committee to go in Virginia. At that point, though, you know, the Secretary of State was a Democrat and will remain a Democrat, thankfully. And so it may have been some kind of strategy on their part to maybe save all the fuel for the Alabama election. So, you know, I agree that the Democratic National Committee needs to step up. I also think the DCCC needs to step up. And
what's the DCCC?
You know,
tell us, Susie, what the DCCC is.
It's a Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, and
okay.
What they do is they sort of pick candidates throughout the United States who they're going to basically put money into and promote. And those candidates don't necessarily always win, but they usually have an advantage, maybe over other Democrats who are in a primary or, you know, moving into the general election. And so, obviously, Jones is the pick for the DCCC in Alabama. And I think that they're also more well-funded right now than the DNC. So I think, you know, maybe a tiered strategy here, which includes the DNC and the DCCC, could help. But I also think that we just have to be the leaders here. And I think we just need to take the bull by the horns and do it and sort of show what we want to do. That has pretty much always been my approach in the Democratic Party, from the California Democratic Party, which I've been on the executive board of for the past 10 years, and also with the DNC. I think sometimes you have to lead by example and do the things that you want them to do and show that it's successful in order for them to buy into it. You know, and that's a reality that I think for progressives in particular, you know, that's the reality of the situation that I think sometimes you have to come to terms with, that, you know, we are the leaders we're looking for.
Well, are these guys brain dead? You know, I was with you in Las Vegas at the DNC. I handed our book to Tom Perez. I mean, he had a vacant stare. We had to kind of beg Keith Ellison to look at it. I have seen no significant involvement by the DNC, the Democratic Party, in dealing with at least electronic election theft. They started recently to talk about massive disenfranchisement, thanks to Greg Powell's great work with his movie and book on Choice Point in the 2000 election, where Jeb Bush disenfranchised more than enough voters to put Al Gore in the White House, and then the interstate cross-check from Chris Kobach, KKK there, the Secretary of State of Kansas, who's now on Trump's national Jim Crow disenfranchisement board. Steve, in this recent piece, where you would think that a party with an interest in winning elections would take your lead and write you and thank you for the piece and ask for instruction, have you had any response from the regular Democratic Party?
No, Harvey. I mean, listen, it's very interesting. Your listeners may or may not know that me, you, and Bob Petraeus co-authored a book that cataloged the 2004 Republican voter suppression, tactics, literally in Ohio. And we were I was approached before, in mid-October, in 2008, by a guy who was finally Warren Stewart, who was then with Verified Voting, but he was also volunteering, and he basically was picked to try to shepherd, like 3 weeks out, some kind of electronic voter, election protection effort for, you know, the inside the Obama campaign, and all we could do. Or all I could do was say, hey, if you spot counties where things look bad, look at, you know, you know, map it by voting machine contractor and quarantine the results. And that was, you know, that was the last I heard. I mean, the problem with the Democrats as a national party is they have a lot of anti-democratic practices that undermine their morality as critics of Republicans. You know, and it's really the kind of stuff, I dare say, that Tom Perez has not addressed since 2016 and leads to the big enduring split that's going to hamper the party in 2018 and 2020 because, you know, the Bernie-crats felt righteously aggrieved. Now, I'm not trying to, like, you know, press the rerun button on 2016, but it's like you have these caucuses in the early states that are run by mom-and-pop precinct captains. They're not professional enough for the stakes. And you don't get – there were no election results given in in Iowa or Nevada. These were key moments in that campaign. How can you have presidential nominating contests when you don't give out raw numbers? And then, of course, you have the superdelegates, which is affirmative action for insiders. They only exist to exclude, and it's 1/6 of the national convention. And we have the same affirmative action for insiders in California Democrats. And so the thing is, all of this prevents people from kind of coming together and moving forward. But this is small potatoes compared to what the Republicans do, which we should be really clear, because the Republicans have had a decade-long national strategy, and it's much more strategic and you know, and effective than with the Democrats.
Absolutely. And let's put it this way. I want to do a very brief history here. I mean, the Democratic Party has essentially won every presidential election since 1992. Clinton was a legitimate winner in 92 and again in 96. Gore was a legitimate winner in 2000. Kerry was a legitimate winner in 2004. Obama won 28 in 2012, and Clinton won 2016. Now, I suffered through Clinton's entire book. I mean, it was excruciating, but I read every word. And, you know, she is so petty and so clueless. She's attacking Bernie Sanders still after the election and never understands that Bernie Sanders' candidacy was the product of one of the biggest social movements in the history of the United States. Bernie Sanders in the primaries, the first avowedly socialist candidate we've had with any kind of clout, got 10 times more votes than Eugene V. Debs did in 1912, which is, you know, astonishing when you think about it. And we now have polls that shows the millennials are more accepting of socialism than they are of capitalism. And if you read Hillary Clinton's book, you have no clue of that. She also, and this is what's really dangerous and really infuriating, she attacks Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate. So, and she, what she does is she takes the numbers of votes that Jill Stein got and shows how if she, Hillary Clinton, had got those votes, she would have won Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Florida, and which is utter nonsense.
It's not true. But those numbers don't add up. But those numbers aren't there, by the way, Harvey.
Yes, I agree. And she has no clue. You know, the Democratic, I see the left divided this way, and you guys can comment. You have the corporate Democrats who are completely corrupt. It's a gerontocracy right out of 100 years of solitude. And, you know, Pelosi and Schumer, I mean, these people are so boring, and they're so corporate. And they've turned the Democratic Party into a cash cow for themselves and their fellow gerrymandered dinosaurs. Then you have the Social Democrats, and Bernie was really not a socialist. He's a Social Democrat. Bernie did not advocate that the government own the means of production. He was very clear on that. He was very different from Gene Debs in that, otherwise pretty much very similar. And then you have the Greens. The Greens are to the left. They're always going to be the left. They're never going to vote for the corporate Democrats. Now, what the corporate Democrats did in 2016 is they shafted the Social Democrats. And if Hillary had had any kind of, the Jewish word is seichel, any kind of common sense, she would have nominated Bernie for vice president or made some kind of outreach and not trashed all the Bernie delegates that came to the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. I was at the one in 68 in Chicago. I got the hell beat out. But these people didn't get beat up physically. But, you know, they were very badly treated. So the bottom line is this. Jill Stein, God love her, completely dedicated to democracy. No chance of becoming president. Took a lot of guff from this from people in the Green Party. Raised $7 million on the Internet and goes into Michigan and has a judge tell her that, yes, there are grounds for a recount, absolutely, but you can't win, therefore you don't have standing. Will the lawyers from the Clinton campaign who are in the courtroom join in the call for the recount? And they said no. Now, in Michigan, Hillary allegedly lost by 10,000 votes. There were 70,000 ballots cast with no preference for president. How does that happen? They all happen to be in Flint, Detroit, by the way. I mean, come on. So, John Brakey, in Alabama.
Yeah.
Is there any chance that this, first of all, we know that there's a massive disenfranchisement Jim Crow machine in place.
Yeah.
And second, we know that they may have the option to do the electronic ballots, the ballot images, but they don't seem to be doing it. Have we had the slightest cooperation from the Democratic Party in trying to assure that this will be, that people can actually vote and that those votes will be counted in Alabama?
None at all. None at all from in Alabama, because I have, you know, through some people I know that's on their list, Pam Miles, she was supposed to try to work with the party, but now Susie's going to, because, you know, they're approaching from a different angle, as well as I hope that more people jump in, because, you know, bottom line is everybody is due a verified election. And in Alabama, I think one thing that's kind of startling, in their primary, 666 people are being threatened with jail because they voted not in their primary, because their voter registration, excuse me, when you walk in, it doesn't say John Brakey, Democrat or Republican. You have to say, hey, I'm John Brakey and I want to vote Republican. Well, that must mean I want a Republican ticket. And they're threatening them, which is a form of voter suppression, which is being done by the Secretary of State. These are the same people I'm dealing with. I find that to be very interesting, because that's a form of suppression, because how do you know, you know, a lot of people, well, I'm going to be a Green, I register a Green, and all of a sudden you go in to vote. You really don't know what party you belong to, you know?
Right, and this is this was a big issue in California,
yeah,
in the primaries, where they,
yeah,
suppressed hundreds of thousands, as best I can tell, of people who are registered in independents, would not let them vote in the Democratic primary for Bernie, and that's how Hillary did what she did in California in the primaries.
Yeah.
Susie, have you had any luck with the Democrats in Alabama on getting people, getting their registrations certified?
Well, I just gave her, I asked her today to do it.
Susie?
She's just,
Susie Shannon,
yeah,
are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. I'm having trouble hearing your question.
Did we have any, have you had any luck with the Democratic Party in being in Alabama and getting people registered, their registration certified, and making sure they're going to vote and making sure those votes are counted? Has the Democratic Party at all risen to this most basic function that they're supposed to serve?
Well, not that I know of. You know, at this point, I think that we just need to keep pushing. I think that we need to go into court, and that needs to happen, whether it's the Democratic Party doing it, the DCCC doing it, activists doing it. You know, it's the question of who is going to support and get the backs of the voters. And if for some reason the DNC is falling short, or people who, you know, should sort of be the custodians of election protection are falling short, I think we just need to step up to the plate. And, you know, if Jill Stein can raise that kind of money, I don't see why we can't. And really, you know, it takes an attorney and it takes somebody with the willingness to go in and make the case. And you need someone with standing.
Can you give me some psychoanalysis here? Do the Democrats really care? I mean, if they can't, if they don't have the common sense to go into Alabama, of all places, where they have a chance, and take the ultimate Jim Crow state. You know, it was mentioned in Martin Luther. I've heard Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech about 100 times because I play it for my class. And there he is, down in Alabama with the segregation that's dripping from nullification. I mean, you know, it's Alabama, for God's sake. They have a chance to win. And the Democrats, the Democratic Party is dead in the water here? What is the mindset of these people? Can you give me any explanation?
Well, the only mindset I can come up with, because I'm dealing with people in Alabama and I'm dealing with Bernie voters, okay, and you know, they get the spin, I guess, they feel the same way a lot of us feel, that in the top part of the party, they're sold out, and being in Alabama, they're such a minority party that really these are people who have to run and they're part of the machine, okay, and that's what some of them say. I don't know that for myself. I don't get so heavily involved in that part.
Susie's on the DNC. Susie, what is the mindset of a party that sees the opportunity, that everybody sees an opportunity and they don't deal with it? Well, can you explain to us?
Yeah, so I think, yes, there are people in the DNC at the national level and all at the state levels too as well who care about election protection. The question is it going to be a priority? Do they care enough about it? Do they see this as an avenue to winning? I think a good indication of that would be the fact that the resolution that we brought to the DNC passed. It wasn't pulled. It was only questioned by like one person in the resolutions committee who had, you know, some questions. But for the most part, I think that people see it as an important thing that needs to happen. The problem now in the reality of the situation is that it's going to take money and it's going to take the staff of the DNC and the leadership of the DNC in terms of the officers recognizing that this needs to be a priority now in Alabama. And with the polls so close and, you know, the national media really focused on this election, this really is the perfect opportunity for the Democratic Party. You know, and I know, you know, there are questions in terms of, you know, how much money there actually is in the coffers and where they're willing to put that money. But I think, you know, my general feeling is that if the DNC would just lead, all of that gets sort of straightened out because people tend to put their money in places where they think there's going to be a good outcome. And so
how could they
if
not?
We can,
that's the point.
Yeah, if we can show that there's a good outcome from this, not just financially, but just, you know, in terms of bumping up, you know, the popularity of the Democratic Party and to show that, you know, we're going back to our roots and making sure that, you know, that not only that we're, you know, protecting people's right to register and go to the polls and have their vote counted, but that, you know, we're willing to take it to the very end and to show that we're protecting that vote. I mean, because you're seeing a lot of donors now, they're still giving to Democrats, but they're giving directly to candidates as opposed to sort of, you know, the institutional Democratic Party apparatus. And I think that's because there are a lot of people who are losing faith. So, you know, I ran for the DNC because I want to start to change that. I know that there are other progressives, you know, who would also, you know, who probably will be running in 3 years when we look at our delegates again. But, you know, there's two Democratic parties, as you explained, and we just need more delegates to come in and a leadership that actually understands that this needs to be a priority.
Well, but we don't have it. How about Doug Jones? Steve, is there any chance that the Doug Jones campaign will pay attention to your article? Have you had any feedback from them? And then I'll ask John.
No, I have no idea, Harvey. I haven't heard anything. I mean, and I think that, I think that it's, you know, politics is layered. There's no one thing that's ever going on. There's no one explanation that is all, you know, inclusive and answers every question. I think that, you know, the point that was just made, it cannot be overstated. Alabama is at the epicenter of one of the most emotional, you know, in the Democratic Party's DNA issues, social movements ever, the voting rights movement. And it is a missed opportunity to try to not engage people, even if, I mean, this is not John Ossoff, who was not a progressive, running in a mostly Republican district, you know, against the former Secretary of State, who basically kind of knew how to rig elections in Georgia. You know, this is, there's a very symbolic story here that is not being told, that is very passionate. I mean, you know, when you talk about people losing their voting rights, it's not like, you know, numbers. It's people, it's like telling people your voice doesn't count. And it really pisses people off. It engages people. It's something that makes people proud that there's been this kind of social progress. So this is a missed opportunity. I think the numbers that Doug Jones faces are very, very formidable. I mean, I looked at the numbers. You know, he has to have basically every Democrat that's registered in the state turn out, and half the Republicans who voted, you know, for Trump not turn out, you know, for him to get a majority. That's a pretty tall order. I mean, that's a 600,000 vote gap. I mean, the state only has, it has 250,000 disenfranchised felons, most of whom are black males, most of whom are not getting their rights restored, even though they had this legislation that they passed that's going to do a little for a few. I mean, it's a really, really steep climb. But you know, this is the stuff we don't hear about. We don't hear about how steep is the climb. We don't hear about, you know, why this matters. We don't hear about, you know, the history that can bring people together. I mean, you know, this is, like you were saying, Harvey, you know, you think people realize that this is the state that, you know, gave us Martin Luther King's advocacy and that there is a voting rights history and legacy here that can be tapped? I mean...
Yeah, we just have to make a conclusion here that the Democratic National Committee, that the Democratic Party is dead.
Well, you have to separate that. Wait, Harvey, you have to be, listen, I've talked to people who are like state party chairs. The Washington National Party is pretty inept, but there's good things happening in some states, and that's it. Got to make that distinction. We just got to be fair about it.
All right. Well, I wish I knew which ones they are. I mean, I also read Donna Brazile's book, which is a lot more fun than Hillary's. First of all, it was a lot shorter, and she's way more engaging, Donna Brazile. And she says basically that Obama essentially bankrupted the party. The Democratic Party essentially was sold to Wall Street by the Clintons in the 80s and 90s. There was a Democratic Leadership Council. And threw away all the principles that the Democratic Party had, and, you know, which had been decimated by Johnson getting us into Vietnam and all that stuff. But nonetheless, the party still stood for Social Security, Medicare, things that were real. And then the Clintons came in for their own personal agenda, sold the party through the DLC to Wall Street, and got it at a principle. Monica Lewinsky and the debacles of 2000 and 2004. And then Obama comes in, wins the presidency, and absolutely neglects the party. And it sucks it dry. According to Donna Brazile, the Democratic Party was more than $20 million of debt in 2016-17. And so Hillary Clinton comes up, and she says, okay, well, I'll raise the money. And she essentially buys the party for yard sales, puts her own people in, denies Bernie the nomination. Now she's gone, and there's nothing left of the National Party. I know what's going to happen. If Doug Jones loses, I'm going to get an email from Nancy Pelosi the next day saying, look how close we came in Alabama. You know, all right, so Steve raises a good point. John, John Brakey, have you had any contact with the Alabama State Democratic Party?
No, and I really have not reached out to them, only to party members. But I'll say this, is that, you know, in the primary, there was no wave in the Alabama primary. There was in Virginia. It was incredible. 33-35% more people voted in this last election a couple of weeks ago than the previous one 2 years earlier or 4 years, wherever they have them. In Alabama, in their primary, the turnout was so low that it was ridiculous, okay? I mean, I think it was like 12 or 14%, or really 7% of the population, if everybody was registered, who could register. And then when the polls are happening, Moore was up in the beginning before the scandal by 13 points. Then the next thing you know, a sex thing happened, the deal, you know, and then all of a sudden, Doug Jones on November 16th in a Fox poll was up 8 points. Some had him high as 12, okay? And then I wake up yesterday, and I find out that Moore's up by 4 because of, Trump endorsing. You know, hey, I felt that Doug Jones was going to win this thing, and really, you know, that fighting for the ballot images was good, but the only way that they can steal this thing if they get it close enough that it passes the smell test. The smell test is now in play. They have this thing close enough that it could be stolen by Moore if the first poll was right. And I don't know if they're going to steal it or not. All I know is my job is to take away their impunity to steal. And how am I going to do that? By making sure that these ballot images become eventually a public record and that we can verify. That takes the hacker impunity away because they know if they exist, that they could be popped. And that's the goal that I'm trying to do.
Susie Shannon from the DNC, have you had any contact with the Alabama Party?
I have not, not yet, although that's a strategy that I think I'm working on now with John in terms of particularly reaching out to the candidate, to Jones, and seeing if there's something we can do. But I will say this. So I think that the most important poll that was taken in this particular race was about 10 days ago where they had 3,000 likely voters who were polled, and there's a margin of error of 2%, which had Moore up by 2 points. And I think that's the most important poll that we need to look at, which basically says that every single vote in this election is going to count. Every single one. So
we're
going to
make sure of that, aren't we?
To just knowing that. And I think, and I want to go back a little bit to Donna Brazile's book, which I think is one of the most important books out there right now on the party and how it works. And the shocking thing, you know, for the chair of the party to lose fiduciary responsibility for the party and to have to appeal to a candidate to write checks is, you know, just is an example of the desperation of the Democratic Party at that particular point in time. And the fact that, you know, if you, you know, I guess the best analogy I could give here is if you lose your keys in the bedroom, but you're looking for them in the kitchen, no matter what you do in the kitchen, you know, you could, you know, get a spotlight to look all over the floor of the kitchen for your keys. You're never going to find them because they're in the bedroom. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is that we need to stop looking to the Democratic Party sometimes to solve these problems, because I think that there are people out there, you know, including John, yourself, Steve, a lot of other folks who know what the answer is. And we just need to put it in motion. We need to show that, I mean, because there's no remedy if you lose your right to vote or your vote isn't counted, everything needs to happen leading up to the election to make sure that, you know, the images are saved on the machines, the ballot images, that that people, you know, that there is no obstruction to going to vote at the polls, you know, that people are, you know, able to vote and have their vote counted. And so I think we just need to stop looking where it's not happening and just make it happen. I think we just need to change the paradigm here, and then we need to get more progressives in at the DNC level and take the example that we're setting in Alabama as activists, take that then to the party and get our people in and move on these issues.
Well, then, so there are two vehicles maybe in Alabama, which would be Doug Jones's candidate, his organization, and the Alabama Democratic Party. So there's about 10 days left.
Well, there's a third option, too, which is the DCCC.
Okay, let's hope. Go ahead, Susie.
I don't want to leave people feeling disempowered. You know, we are empowered to do something, and we can't just say because the DNC isn't moving and we've appealed to them and they're not going into court, we've got to now look at, you know, plan B, plan C, plan D, and on until we make it happen. We just have to make it happen.
Steve Rosenfeld, what's your take?
Harvey, I really want to second what Susie is saying, because, you know, when we hear stories that we can't do anything, or we have no power, or it's been taken from us, or it's already predetermined, you know, we're left where we are, which is on the losing end. And the truth of the matter is, take a look at what just happened in Virginia. Nobody expected the turnout wave that came, including, you know, the state party and you know, the national parties. And what
we got to take this up. Steve Rosenfeld, thank you so much. Susie Shannon, John Brakey, we'll talk about this again next week if you can.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thanks, everybody.
What we needed when the sun shone down.